Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Ottawan born singer-songwriter Jamie Fine joins us for a second time on the Celeb Savant podcast. From 2014 through to 2020, Jamie was part of the pop duo Elijah Woods and Jamie Fine. They were successful on the charts and had several award nominations, including Best New Canadian Artist or Group at the 2018 iHeart Radio MMVAs. In 2020, the duo split and Jamie decided to pursue a solo career. Her unique ability to convey intense emotion is her superpower. For Jamie, music is deeply personal. A five-time Juno nominee, Jamie's music has over 100 million global streams. Her hit single, If Anything's Left, reached platinum status in Canada and double platinum in South Africa. With nearly 1.5 million followers worldwide, fans are drawn to her energetic personality, quirky humor, and openness. As her audience grows, Jamie's goal remains to create inclusive emotional spaces through her music. Up next on Celeb Savant, catching up since we last spoke and discussing her upcoming tour to South Africa in April and May of 2025, is Jamie Fine.
Well, Miss Jamie Fine, welcome back to the Celeb Savant podcast. It's been a few months. How are you doing?
I'm dreaming of South Africa is how I'm doing.
And you are in Canada now, right?
I'm in Canada. I'm at home and have a little bit of time off, but so naturally finding work to do because I can't sit freaking still.
Another feeling, yeah. So for the listeners, this is Jamie's second time on this Celeb Savant podcast. So Jamie, what's been happening since I saw you last when you were in South Africa a few months ago?
Lots and lots. A lot of changes. We are officially an independent artist.
Okay.
I worked pretty tirelessly in figuring out. I've been wanting to be an independent artist for a long time, and we worked hard last year to make that happen and start, you know, a new chapter. Mm-hmm. So that's a really big change. But other than that, like same old. We are cranking away at music and writing lots, and we are excited to get back there. We just announced some touring stuff, so it's been a big year.
What is the difference between being an independent artist and an artist that is with a label?
To you guys, nothing. To me,
yes.
I have to pay for everything. Barrett, I have to pay for everything. Okay. No, it's honestly one of those things that in the world of music that we're, you know, in right now, social media is king.
Yes.
Right? Social media is a powerhouse, and I've been in this industry for 8 years, you know, and I've been with the label for 8 years, and I've learned so much, and I have such a strong team that a lot of the time, the scary parts about being without a label is if you don't have a strong enough team, you have to navigate the industry, the big, bad, scary industry. But because we have so much experience with it, it was something that, again, we were really trying to push for in a big way. And so to you guys, it wouldn't look any different. To me, it's like, oh, we just have more work to do. Our team has more work to do.
You say, you referenced there were steps that you were building to allow that to happen. How long did those steps take? And were there any parts of the process that you were like, oh, I didn't realize this would be part of it?
For sure, there were a lot of surprises, for sure. Okay. Like with anything else, you know, 1, 2, 3 jumping comes with some surprises. You know, when I started out with a label at first, I would say, you know, I didn't have a great experience with my first label. The people that I worked with at Universal are some of my favorite people in the world, including the Universal team in South Africa. Like I had such beautiful, beautiful times with everyone. And I hope that we still also get to, you know, work together continuously. It had less to do with being with the label itself and more to do with, I want to control my music. I want to know what's happening with my music. I want to be able to plan my own marketing plan and some stuff that you guys wouldn't have seen on your guys' end when we first said, I want to come to, you know, South Africa. Well, there were some ropes that we had to jump through rather than just us getting on a plane. I want to be in control of that, of saying, hey, if I want to go somewhere in the world, I'm going to go somewhere in the world because it's my music, right? So although I had a beautiful experience with this last label, it's just really about me saying, I want to own my stuff for a second and figure out what's next.
You mentioned jumping through hoops and stuff without pointing fingers or anything negative. So my understanding, I'm speaking generally now, is that because there's so many artists on a label that there's a lot of red tape for decisions to be made. And also, secondly to that, this is Jamie Fine, and this is, you know, how we know her. We need to keep her sort of in that mold. Am I correct about that understanding?
100%. And it's not, listen, it's, I think the part that I struggled with most is that concept that it wasn't people being malicious. It wasn't people being bad. It was them making business decisions that they felt was a good business decision. And me saying, but I think this is a good business decision. And then butting heads. And that's a healthy thing to do in business, right? Because I learned so much from them. They learned, as they had said, kind of some stuff from me. And that's very healthy. But all in all, again, having that control and being able to say, okay, I don't have to ask anybody permission. I don't have to have a larger plan. I can 1, 2, 3 jump and either face consequences or celebrate the success of doing that. That's all on me now, right?
Okay, so a couple of points that you've learned. Maybe a couple of things that you thought, okay, this is going to be great, but it didn't turn out so great. What were those couple of lessons that you've learned? Not necessarily the story, but the overview lesson.
I think it's how hard you have to work to get music out. You know, that labels, you know, we're distributing through this amazing company, SRG, right now. And there's a lot of work that gets involved or that's involved in doing that. So I think that getting organized and learning the process of the checklist of what needs to, you know, go out, but also connecting with people is a little different, and especially global relationships and this and that and the other. It's like very business side of things, but it's all this like learning curve of what I love about my team is that we learn it, we never forget it.
Yes.
That it ingrained in our process now, and that's it. And so every time we go through it, we learn more and more and become stronger and stronger as a unit.
I love that, because so many people in the world, without any judgment, they go through lessons in life and they keep having to go through the same thing, because it becomes about projection and blame instead of like, okay, this is experience. What do I have to learn? Let's learn it and let's pass through.
Yeah, it's the whole concept of shame. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Right?
Exactly.
That whole concept of at some point, you know, we would have to take accountability. And listen, I have a great therapist, so I already went through that process of realizing, pointing fingers and having to take accountability and yada, yada, yada. And I expect that from my team and they expect that from me.
Is a label not involved with distribution?
They are. They are for sure involved. Okay. So we're distributing through a label right now, SRG, and they're great over there. And, you know, we love everybody we're working with over there. But, you know, distribution looks different than label, a full label deal.
And when you say distribution, does it mean distributing the music to the world? Is that my?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are your perceptions of social media? You reference it's king or queen. So what is that for you?
It's a pain in my ass sometimes. I'll tell you that. It's a pain in my side. Social media, I always say, like, I'm 31. I still am part of the millennial generation that like did not grow up with Instagram or TikTok. And so it does not come organically to me. And social media can be, you know, frustrating. I was saying the other day, I miss the days where we were on Instagram and we could just take a picture of our piece of toast and jam and put it. And like our friends would be like, wow, Jamie, that jam looks amazing. And I'm like, thanks, Darlene. It's yummy. Like I miss those days where it just was easy. And now everything is algorithm based, right?
Yes.
And so I really do struggle with it. And I'm very open about my struggle with having a hard time playing that game versus just putting out content. And you look at something like with If Anything's Left, where everything went viral and it was so beautiful. And then once you experience that moment, you want to try to recreate it. And when you don't, it's one of the most devastating things, at least for me and for a lot of other artists that I speak to, because it's a game versus, hang on a second, I have all these people who decided to follow me, but these platforms won't necessarily shoot the content out to those people that do want to see it, that signed up to see it.
Yeah.
I think that's a tough pill for me to swallow.
Yeah, it's also, I find it frustrating because you think, okay, this is a video that's going to do fantastically. It's like 100 views or whatever, however many views. And then you think, oh, I'm just going to push this random one on, which is not really. And they're like 2.3 million views. I'm like, okay, well, like, why?
I know, and it's you know the you know I complain about it pretty openly, but it's also given me everything that I have right now, right?
Yes.
And it's a beautiful part. I get to connect with incredible people. One of the things that I was on a live the other day, and somebody asked me like, "What's your advice? I'm a new artist. What's your advice to battle the social media game?" And one of the things I said to them is, "You have to learn to appreciate one viewer, one
Yes.
person saying, liking or commenting or viewing, and then going to listen to a song or buying a ticket to a show, even if it's one person, that's a beautiful thing." And we're so caught up in numbers, and I'm
Yeah.
so caught up in numbers that I often have to remind myself, hang on a second. If something has 10,000 views versus a million, well, 10,000 people still saw it. That's still a
Yeah.
beautiful thing, you know?
Thank you. You just gave me an aha moment. You always give me aha moments when we chat. I love
We're best
it.
friends, Barrett, dude. We are best friends.
Okay, so I would like your observation. Now, we love the fans. We absolutely love the fans. We know this and we love them. Just saying this to all the listeners. Obviously, being an artist, a lot of people see you, love you, and interact with you, and especially on social media, a lot of people perceive you as sort of their friend now. Have you ever had a situation where a person has come up to you, obviously we love them, and then they've interacted with you as if they obviously they know you, but that you should know them. And how do you deal with that? I see you laughing.
It's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question because I can think of 14,000 times that this happened. You know, one of the things that I, you know, it's my promise to my fans is I want people to feel like they do know me and feel like they can know me. And I want that interaction with fans. And so it's a blessing and a curse for sure. I have had some scarier moments of, lines being crossed and in those moments, I kind of think, but I don't want to change. Like, I don't want to be different. I don't want to have to be cold, or I don't want to have to be less warm with, the people supporting my career and my music. But when those lines get crossed, sometimes it can be pretty uncomfortable. I think that I try to set boundaries as much as I can and in the healthiest and kindest ways that I can, or just communicate. Like, if somebody is, if we're chatting and it's been 35 minutes and I'm like, oh my God, I have to go. Try to say like, thank you so much for the time. I am so sorry. Like, I got to get out of here, and really just try not to be rude in any way. But for sure, there's a handful of times that, those lines have been crossed. I don't want to be any different. I don't want to be different with my fans. And if it means that I have to be a little more firm or ask my team to be a little more firm, okay, fine. But I don't want to take away from the other people that aren't crossing those lines, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. The creation process, has that changed in any way being an independent compared to being on a label, or is the creation process still the same?
Still the exact same. I've worked my whole career at making sure that I don't have any limitations on my creativity, and that when the faucet's running, that nothing turns it off, regardless of what's happening, on the other side. And to be candid, we'll still distribute through labels, and we'll still, have those relationships with the majors. But no, the biggest change isn't on the creative side. It's really on the back end, and I try not to let that, interact too much with the creative side.
Tell us about all the new music, what the creation has been.
So this latest release that I did called Like I Do, which God bless that social media, I'm trying to push it, but the algorithms do not like this one. It's a pretty big one for me. I really wanted to sit down and take the summer. We had released an EP, and then I needed a break. And we took a summer. We spent it in LA. I went through my highs and lows, and then I wrote, and I sat down and I wrote for me. And it was this lane of music that I felt wasn't pushed by any agenda. It wasn't pushed by what I thought was going to go viral or not. It wasn't pushed by what I thought people were going to love. It's what I loved. And Like I Do is the first song in that, section of next piece of music that I'm going to be putting out that is unforgivably me. And it's real and it's raw, and it shows the most important things in my life, from people to just things that I care about or things that I'm going through. And I think so far a lot of people are relating to it in really beautiful ways. It's good.
So you mentioned you took a break. So I know the world, the entertainment world, is very fast, very busy, lots of things happening and happening. Obviously, it's from your experience and your perspective. When you decide to take a break, What are the things for you that say, okay, stop now, I need to just be with me?
I think that the first thing, you know, I have my tells. You know, I went through, I'm pretty open about in the past, I went through a big, big mental breakdown and did a really big 5-year blurt of really intense psychoanalysis to rewire my brain and to understand my tells and understand when I need to stop pushing and when it's okay to keep pushing. My anxiety comes out physically, you know, with panic attacks or not being able to sleep, whatever it is. And so for me, when I feel I'm pushing myself too hard, it's when I have this exhaustion that I can't shake, even if I'm sleeping or if I can't sleep, or if I, you know, if I feel my ADHD is acting up and I can't concentrate and I can't focus, I know that it's time to take a little second to chill. But my biggest thing is if I'm waking up every day unhappy, I know that a change needs to happen. And there's all these moments in my life that I can remember where I remember waking up after a couple months of every day waking up unhappy, being like, whoa, I'm waking up every day unhappy. I don't want to do this anymore. So I need to make a change. And that's probably the biggest thing that is like my tell of, okay, we're making a change and we're doing it now. We're 1, 2, 3 jumping.
Okay. So now you referenced EP. A lot of artists I've spoken to lately say that the world of the singles, it's not really the body of work of an album. I still love me an album. I love the album. I like, you know, I still buy my CDs, as we've discussed this before. But what are your perceptions of the landscape at the moment with regards to bodies of work? Do you feel that it still can push through with albums, or we need to still navigate of what the algorithms are feeding?
I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think you look at people like Benson Boone and Noah Kahan and Sabrina Carpenter and Gracie Abrams. They had very successful albums, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, they had this bigger plan and they had this bigger marketing and they had, you know, they had these fans come on and say, this song's incredible. The rest must be incredible. And then every song landed. There's this artist I love talking about here in Canada. His name's Jutes. And he is a rock god. He's incredible. And he's been working at music for a long time. And his music has blown up internationally in a huge way because one song after another hit, because they're real, it's really good music, like really freaking good music. And so he can put out this body of work where people are like, I'm going to go listen to it top to bottom because I can relate to everything. For most people, as you say, though, it is the singles game. And it's, you know, when I think now, instead of planning an album and saying we're going to market it and work our way up to it, what I do and my team kind of values is we're going to have an album ready to go and we're going to play the singles game and we're going to have a body of work that means something to us and is important to us. And when we're ready to hit go, it will be ready to go.
Okay.
But I don't want to waste a project, right? I don't want to, you know, I don't want to put something out and have people not know that it exists because the algorithms aren't, you know what I mean, shooting it out. I want to wait until the right time. And I think that a lot of artists are doing that now, and that's okay. It's just different.
You know, it's also interesting because we discussed this previously, the digital versus the physical. And I've been speaking to a lot of people in the world who sort of are fans, who'll go to see one or two concerts, who listen to songs here and there. And I said to them, if an artist has 100 million streams, how much money do you think they're actually getting? The first batch of people said to me, 50 million.
I wish. I'd be rich, folks.
The second batch of people said one or 2 million. And I said, actually, no, it's like 1,000. And they were shocked and horrified. So the point of this whole conversation is that, yes, it's all very excited to very good and very important to shout out the accolades and the achievements. But I also feel there needs to be an education part of, yes, we got 100 million. Yay. Amazing. Thank you so much for the support. But to know that we only got this amount of money, how do you feel this education for those people needs to happen without it being blasted in their faces?
You know, I think that it's the same with teaching anybody any lesson, from political things to human rights things to anything that matters in the world. I think it's just about not shoving it down their throat.
Okay.
The people who care will care. And people who don't care won't care. You know, I'm transparent about those things on my social media. You know, I don't talk about necessarily the fact that 1 million streams is $4,500 Canadian dollars. It's not, you know, it's not a lot of money. However, what I try to educate people is, I think during COVID, this is really when it happened, where there was so much reliance on only social media and only streaming because the world wasn't opened up. We couldn't do shows.
Exactly.
But for me, you know, 80% of an artist's income typically is shows and merch, right?
Yeah.
And so if something gets millions and millions of streams, well, I can come to South Africa and I can go to the UK and I can tour across Canada. And so those streams are still very important, especially in terms of financials for an artist. However, we're not getting that from the actual streams, but we're getting hired to play the show.
Oh,
right?
Okay. Okay. So redirecting that focus and energy into that.
Yeah. It's like, I'm so glad you love the song. Come to a show and
okay.
we'll, you know, and come to a show because that ticket is a little bit more lucrative, but also maybe you'll listen to the other music live and decide that you love it. Right. Instead of just one song or one body of work,
yes.
maybe you'll love it.
We played this game last time. I know your answer is going to be different this time. But remember, it's the first five that come to mind.
Yeah.
If you had to push play to five songs by other artists now, if you can't think of the songs, just five artists, who would the artists be? And if you can think of songs, what would those five songs be?
So right now, Benson Boone, for sure. You know, I'm on the wave of the Gracie Abrams, This Is True, or whatever it's called. I'm obsessed with that song that's going blowing up. I think it's a beautiful song. Anything by Benson Boone, truly. Noah Kahan, anything by him. J. Cole will still always be my, you know, my top. And I'm going to go with Jutes right now, probably.
Okay.
The Canadian artists are talking about. He's in the States now, but yeah.
J-U-T-S, or how do you spell it?
J-U-T-E-S.
Okay, J-U-T-E-S, lovely. For the tour coming up, tell us what you have to share.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah. Or is it all secrets?
No, it's not all secrets. Okay. We are just excited to get back there. We're going to be hitting new cities, which I'm really excited about. We're going to be coming back to some of the OGs that we've been to, but we're going to be hitting more of South Africa, which we've been, you know, excited to do for 2 years. We're also, you know, there's new music to play and still coming with Darius and Matt, which South Africa loves them as much as I do.
Yes.
And yeah, we're just going to try to, you know, put on the same great show, but like see you guys again and spend time with you guys because we only get to get out there once a year.
Yes.
That we're really, again, going to try to like see more of South Africa that we didn't get a chance to see last time and play some new music.
So for me and the people who come to see one or two shows, they think you guys have such a glamorous life. You know, you're on the stage. It's all la, la, la. But it's not. It's quite difficult on and off the plane, different time zones, to the soundtrack. Well, all that kind of stuff. For you personally, because I know everyone's different, how do you maintain balance in your energy, your body, and your soul with all of that hecticness?
I prioritize sleep. I prioritize downtime and rest. You know, I always say I don't drink on tour. You know, I want to give my body the best chance it can physically and mentally. You know, we really try to stay healthy on tour, mentally and physically. For me, touring with a group of people is really helpful because they make me feel normal.
Okay.
Tour does not feel normal for me. I'm not in my own bed. I don't have my
yes.
family around. I don't have my saucepan that I like cooking with or my frying pan that I like. You know, I don't have my grocery store across the street that I love. All these things that are out of place for me that throw me out of whack. And so as much normalcy as I can get.
Yeah.
So I try to bring things with me on tour that, you know, remind me of home. But I really prioritize my downtime so that I can be as mentally strong as possible.
Okay. So we're looking forward to the tour in South Africa and for the rest of the world. So Jamie, as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I love you forever and always. I appreciate you forever and always. One of the biggest highlights of my life was that Johannesburg show. I was in a really tough mental space and I kind of knock myself on the head every once in a while for it because I wasn't necessarily as present as I would have liked to be. But one of the biggest highlights of my life, not just in my career, was that Johannesburg show where there were 4,500 people screaming, making signs. And it was something that I've pushed for all of my 8 years of being a professional musician. And that was one of the moments that I was like, oh my God, I'm doing what I was meant to do on this planet, and I'm doing it successfully. And South Africa as a whole gave me that in a really big way. So thank you always, and I'm forever indebted to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.